Hello, everybody, and welcome again. This is Justin and Lizzie, and we're turning towards life once again on this Sunday in January 2026. Happy New Year, if this is the time of year that you celebrate newness. I'm fancying celebrating the new year maybe in February or something. I can't feel it yet. but welcome, and we're so happy if you're coming back. We're so happy if you're new. We're so happy if you're returning after a while of not being here with us. This Turning Towards Life community is quite something, and we hope to be a place, a kind of spring to return to whenever anybody wants to find us and is in need of this kind of conversation. This maybe there's a longing for a kind of conversation that we can't find very much in the world. And often that's what I hear, is that this kind of conversation isn't one that's ordinarily had. So everybody is very welcome here, and thank you for being here. Thank you for asking the questions that you ask and wondering in the way that you wonder that you might be interested in being here with us. It's a grand pleasure for us to be in this conversation with one another, you and I, Justin, and also to know that it lives in the hearts of many others around the world as well. So welcome. And Justin, thank you always for your sources and bringing unusual things that would never cross my path. And then they cross my path and it's glorious. So thank you.
Maybe that's what this whole thing is about. Lizzie is bringing new things to cross one another's paths, but also crossing everybody else's. Hello, everyone who's with us. And I'm thinking, as we begin, about this theme that you just raised about being in a conversation that's longed for, and thinking that that's, I think, what you and I and the others who we partner with in the things that we get up to in the world, that's mostly what we do, is create opportunities for conversations that people long for, that are going to be resonant and rich and deep, and sometimes shift the course of a life in some way. And so with that in mind, I want to say that in a couple of months' time, in March, we are beginning the second season of Turning Towards Life Live, where any of you who are listening and any others who you know can come and join us and others and be in this kind of conversation once a month, every month for 6 months. And we do, it's been wonderful, Lizzie, this first season of Turning Towards Life Live, which is coming to an end. And hello, all of you who are part of that. We're so glad that you're traveling with us. And then the doors fling open again. So you can find all the details on the turningtowards.life website. And all of our work in Third Space is about making a kind of conversation that might be deeply longed for and resonant and change things. And that's what we mean by coaching. So there are lots of Third Space things coming up, including our year-long coaching program in the summer, and the run-up to that, our Foundations of Coaching programs in February and onwards. So I always want to say you can find all of that at wearethirdspace.org. And then there's this, Lizzie, that we've been up to. It's so funny. I can't actually remember how many years we've been doing this now. Is it like 8 or 9? Or I can't remember, but it's I forget these things. But here we are beginning 2026, and we're going to do the same thing that we always do, which is this week, as you know, I've brought a source, which if you're listening, you can always find the sources on our website and in the show notes and on YouTube. And we'll read it, and then we will unfold into a spacious and unhurried conversation. So this, Lizzie, source is by Bernardo Kastrup, who is someone whose work I have been following for a long time. And listening to Bernardo and reading him has been very impactful and resonant with me. And it's been hard to find something to bring, because of the way he writes and the depth and how much you have to hold in order to be able to read him. He's written this book about vocation and about what we're called to be in the world, called the diamond and the soul of the West. And this is from that. One of the cruelest ironies of Western life is that today the key unquestioned, seemingly self-evident axiom of the Western well-being and self-help industry is precisely that our life is about us, that we have to wrestle the reins of our life from mere happenstance and circumstance and determine its course ourselves, that we have to proactively pursue our agenda and project meaning onto it, and perhaps cruelest of all, that our life is about our being happy. All of this is unnatural and unjustified to the point of being grotesque. It is the life of an apple blossom about the apple blossom. If not, then for precisely the same reason, ours cannot be about us. And this is the great discovery of the second half of life. Our life isn't, has never been, and can't ever be about us. Why would it? We are part of nature. Why would our life be about us and not nature as a whole? Nature is, of course, impersonal. Its agenda is universal and holistic, not restricted to the petty egoic tastes and preferences of a person. It is naive to expect a human being to be able to comprehend the universal agenda, just as it is naive to expect an apple blossom to comprehend what its role is in the grand scheme of apple trees and life on Earth. We are segments of nature, not mere witnesses. We didn't parachute into nature, but grew out of it. Therefore, we are nature, as expressed in a particular volume of space-time.
Thank you, Justin. So Bernardo writes, "One of the cruelest ironies of Western life is that today the key unquestioned, seemingly self-evident axiom of the Western well-being and self-help industry is precisely that our life is about us. That we have to wrestle the reins of our life from mere happenstance and circumstance and determine its course ourselves. That we have to proactively pursue our agenda and project meaning onto it. And perhaps cruelest of all, that our life is about our being happy. All of this is unnatural and unjustified to the point of being grotesque, but is the life of an apple blossom about the apple blossom? If not, then for precisely the same reason, ours cannot be about us. And this is the greatest discovery of the second half of life. Our life isn't, has never been, and can never be about us. Why would it? We are part of nature. Why would our life be about us and not nature as a whole? Nature is, of course, impersonal. Its agenda is universal and holistic, not restricted to the petty egoic tastes and preferences of a person. It is naive to expect a human being to be able to comprehend the universal agenda, just as it is naive to expect an apple blossom to comprehend what its role is in the grand scheme of apple trees and life on Earth. We are segments of nature, not mere witnesses. We didn't parachute into nature, but grew out of it. Therefore, we are nature, as expressed in a particular volume of space-time."
I want to start with this metaphor of apple blossoms. And we used to have a little apple tree in our garden, Lizzie, which isn't there anymore. Didn't do very well, that one. But I know from looking at it what an apple blossom tree looks like. There's this point in spring where the whole thing bursts into life. Like at the end of every branch and all along the branches, there are flowers coming out. And I was thinking about, as you were reading, how separate from everything it's easy to feel. And I know that some of, let me just talk about me, because obviously I've got the most intimate first-person experience of me. So many of my own difficulties, crises, and dilemmas have been around this. I'm meant to know what I'm doing. I'm meant to have it all sorted out. I'm meant to know what I'm going. I'm meant to be the person who shapes my life entirely. I'm meant to be able to make myself happy. And when I imagine, when I do that, and there's some merit in it, but when I do that, when that's my only story about myself, I tend to feel incredibly alone and incredibly desperate, because the truth is that's way beyond me most of the time. I have no idea how the world works. I'm not immensely or ultimately powerful. I can't make people think or do what I want them to do. And I can't actually make the world go in a way that meets my preferences a lot of the time, some of the time. And I have moments of great joy. And then I imagine myself being an apple blossom. And the first thing that happens when I put myself into that story is the first thing I notice is that there are flowers flowering. If I look, if I turn to my left and my right, I'm surrounded by others who are flowering in just the way that I am. And they're all different and they're all in different places. And the world seems to become full of gifts and aliveness in a way that I don't notice if I'm just sort of contracted around my own thing. And then, of course, being an apple blossom, if the blossom remembers, and this I think this is true of us, and then if I let myself feel that in coming into my back is a tree, and that I'm not the tree, and that the tree coming into my back flows from all of my ancestors, my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and all the way back. Like if I let myself really feel this tree that's behind me, it goes all the way back through all the generations who lived that brought me into the world. And it goes back further because behind them is the non-human life from which we came. And behind them is plant life. And behind them is single-celled bacteria and first life. And then behind that is the world itself. And so if I let myself feel like I'm the blossom at the end of this, surrounded, and I look left and right and I look at you and I see another blossom with the same background behind me, what I can feel happen is that the question that I ask changes. And that's what I think Bernardo does such a good job of pointing to, because then instead of how do I get what I want in exactly the form that I want, that tastes just right and it's not too hot and not too cold and just as I like it, and then I'll feel exactly right and I've got to do it all myself, I feel myself much more as sort of like the expression of a whole vast something that is making itself known in the world. And I then have to ask a different question, which is what's being asked of me here? And also know that I'll never really know the answer. Just like a blossom can't see the whole tree and its roots. And then there's this place where Bernardo says, a blossom can't see how the tree it's on is part of a giant unfolding something. And it's such a relief to remember myself that way. And the last thing that occurs to me to say is, I notice that when I'm desperately trying to figure out my life for myself, I go, this is maybe just me, but I go inwards. I become self-centered. I mean, really self-centered, mostly because I'm afraid. And when I let myself go this way, I feel myself way more generous and way less clingy to having life turn out as I've been told it should and as I've imagined I should. And I feel less of a failure and more of a contribution. I mean, there's lots more to say about that, but that's sort of the drift of it.
I'm feeling the kind of, like, what's being offered here isn't kind of a this or that, like be happy or something else thing. It's like you're speaking from a different sense of reality or something, like a different way of perceiving life. And think maybe that's what Bernardo's intention is, to offer something as an alternative. So when I hear your painting of the alternative world that Bernardo's inviting you into with these words, it feels like a I don't know, like an undoing is happening or something. And the bit that got me about this passage is when he said that the cruelest way of interpreting life that's presented to us by our Western thought is that our life is about being happy. And when you read that to me, I thought, oh, how brilliant that someone's suggesting that that's not the thing. Because as soon as that's not the thing, it's much easier to welcome many more things. I can feel that when that's the definition of what it is to have a good life, we have to exclude and we have to push away so many things. We have to say no to so many things that are part of nature, that are part of naturalness of being human. And as a person who really values happiness and really values joyfulness, I feel like it really matters to be questioned in that. You know, to be questioned in, for example, having that be the ultimate value at all costs, that is what we're going to go for here, is to be happy. It doesn't serve to do that if I'm interested in becoming a full human being, like the full spectrum of humanness that I think I probably signed up for when I ticked the yes, please box to come to Earth. I think I probably said yes to everything. Otherwise, I don't think it's the place to be, because life is extraordinarily complex and unexpected and crazy and miraculous and awful and wonderful and all the things. And so to be presented with an alternative that doesn't just demand that I'm happy and that everyone around me is happy, but that allows the fullness of life to be possible, a deep encounter with all of humanity to be possible, for example, is a very different possibility of a human life. And then it becomes very, very interesting. Like I can feel myself go, oh, okay, so if that's not the goal, if that's not what this is all about, it may be part of it, but what else is there that I'm missing, because that's all that I've made important, is that everyone's okay and everyone's happy and we're all fine all the time. And I can feel that, in my, like you were saying, like the going backness, I can feel that request or that implicit aim or demand that we're all okay all the time. And I'm really appreciating this possibility that there's way more to be held as our intentions for living than just being happy, and letting that not just be in some kind of intellectual way, but like in the way that we live, in the way that we greet people, in the way that we say hello, in the way that we walk around and be and are in our intimate relationships, that we look at that and we look at the demand that we have on one another to be okay, and we relax that and see what's actually here rather than the hanging on to that implicit demand for happiness.
What you're saying, what it awakens in me, Lizzie, is that to, you said this beautiful sentence about having signed up for all of it. And when this part that you're drawing attention to at the beginning of this, where Bernardo says it's really cruel that we mistake that the well-being and self-help industry makes it about us and about our happiness. What's the cruelty in it? And it seemed to me that one of the cruelties in it is that it can confuse us that what we're meant to be doing is trying to have a certain kind of experience. So when I meet you, I sit with you, all of my calculation about you then ends up being about how you are for me. Do you make me happy or not? Do I have the kind of experience around you that I want? And if you don't make me happy, well, you've got to make me happy, Lizzie, or I'm going to feel disappointed in you and disappointed in me, and maybe let's get out of this friendship and relationship. And the back to frontness of it is, first of all, is to think about what that makes me if I do that to you. It draws this vast life I'm in, of which you are an expression, it draws all of the weight of it onto me. Now I've got to all the time be sort of policing who and what I'm with in order to generate this experience that I want to have. And the way you were talking about it is much more like, what happens if we let ourselves be here for all of it? And then I can feel tenderness towards you, or grief, or anger, or disappointment, or whatever. And here it is, and you can feel what you're feeling, and we can be in something that's bigger than us together. It shifts the place of our attention into engaging with life and with one another rather than trying to control life.
Mm.
And then I think being in allowing ourselves, it's again something you've said so often in these years of our talking, allows ourselves to be in receipt of our lives. Like, here I am with you, and I can receive what it is to be here with you, and then dive into that, whatever it is, rather than trying to contract it around something very, very tiny. And it sort of seems a paradox to me, but the conversation reveals it, is that our desperation to be happy makes life rather mean easily, like mean-spirited. And then anyway, we're never going to feel real joy from that. And joy can be in grief, and joy can be in friendship, and joy can be in addressing our difficulties and our disappointments. Like, there's something called joy, which is not happiness. It's a kind of aliveness. And also, if I'm spending all of my time on how is this for me and am I happy, it seems to me that it just takes me away from a much more life-giving, fulfilling, and also ethical question, which is what kind of person to be in the world?
Mm.
Like, who do I want to be around you? What kind of presence do I want to be? And none of that is about how I feel. I will feel all kinds of things. Who do I want to be? And then, just to take the second part of Bernardo's writing, and then to realize that because I cannot really know what my place is in the world, I can't know what the ultimate impact of my presence is. I have no idea how your life unfolds because I was here, and how your families and your children's and your friends unfold because of the impact that I have. The one thing that I can do is commit myself to bring myself with as much generosity and care and responsiveness and aliveness as I can to my relationship with you, which is all the other way around from that I have to get happy.
Mm.
It's to recognize that I will make the contribution I can in as life-giving a way as I can, which means it has to be life-giving for me too. It has to include me. And then I have to let it go, because I'm not in charge of how I feel or how you feel or what happens.
Mm. Yeah, I'm feeling very kind of met by this feeling of unfathomable complexity. You know, I think you've said this a lot, Justin, but sometimes I think there's an inherent demand in the way that the world is, that's like, we have to be sure about something. We have to stand somewhere. We have to declare something that's true or something. And so much of the time I feel, like even coming here, I often think, well, I don't know what I think about anything. I don't know. You know, the more I see, the more I feel, the more I open to life, the more smashed to smithereens I feel about being a person. And my heart feels so complex, and I don't know whether confused is the right word. It's not maybe not confusion, but there's so much going on that to stand somewhere, I feel completely undone as soon as I stand anywhere. I think, well, but there's another perspective too, or there's another element to this that I haven't understood yet. Or so this aligning with and considering myself as nature also has like a relief in it too, because it removes the demand for the, what does he call it? The, something about the petty personality or something. The egoic tastes and preferences. It's like, I think sometimes the world is asking that of us, and it's really hard to deliver on that. It's hard to say, well, I want this and I want that and I think this and I think that. I don't know how possible that feels sometimes for me anymore. And to consider myself as nature and to be able to respond as nature might, like how a tree responds in a storm, or how a river responds when a rock drops from a cliff into it. To feel like I can be a response rather than I have to be something that everything bounces off and it's static and it's the same and you can always count on this being this thing. I don't feel kind of reliable anymore in that sense. I don't feel reliable as to someone who can declare that this is what is what and this is how we should live or this is how we should. It feels sometimes impossible to be that. Like in this moment, I feel that. And this kind of invitation and permission to be undone from our human structures or something, and to feel into our likeness to nature and our actual inherent natureness that is us, feels like it gives us permission to be that thing that you're saying, to be responsive, to actually respond rather than come from a place of readiness or sureness or definitiveness or I know what I'm talking about or something.
Everything that you're saying now, Lizzie, makes me think about control and how we try to control things. And how you draw attention to this line about the petty egoic tastes and preferences of a person. I was thinking, oh yeah, so many of my tastes and preferences were just what the culture handed to me. They're not even, they could be something else. I could have other tastes, I could have other preferences. And just seeing that shows me how when I get very tight and grasping and try to control the world, how tiny my life has become, you know, so that I'll get my preferences met, how tiny my life has become compared to what happens if I allow myself to know myself as nature and turn towards life in response. And I was thinking, Lizzie, as you were talking, you and I were talking just before we began about this extraordinary film, Hamnet, which we both saw last night, which is one of the things that strikes me about the film, which who knows if any of you are listening have heard, seen the film, maybe you will do one day, but it's full of unexpected happenings, many of them grief-filled, places where the world doesn't turn the way anybody wants it to. Someone dies. And I was thinking as you were talking about how what it is to meet life in response rather than in control. So in the face of grief, for example, that of me that wants everything to be okay and wants to be happy might well, and I have done in the past and much less so now, but contracted around, this shouldn't be happening. I have to feel a different way. Let me bottle it all up, which removes me from my own experience and also removes me from generous presence with other people who might be in the same grief, for example. And I loved your metaphor of being like a tree responds in the storm, which is what happens if I let myself feel, for example, when I meet grief, that I'm not in this alone. And I look left and right and up and down, and there are all these other blossoms who are meeting grief because that's what life is. But then behind me, there's everyone who met grief all the way through the human generations, they're behind me too. So I can meet this if I really let myself feel all of that and feel that I'm not a separate ego. And then I'm here to respond to the thing that's happening. And it might equally well be something extraordinarily joyful. The same thing, which is... And it's occurring to me now that one of the mistakes we also make is when we think our life is about us, we think that what's happening is to us. How could this happen to me? As if the grief that I'm experiencing is somehow happening to me, or the random joy and success that I'm having, which I will have played a part in, but somehow it's all about me. But our successes are being made by the world as a whole. Our griefs are being made by the world as a whole, and we are part of the world as a whole. So that it seems to me there's, you said at the beginning about the end of this, that we can hold, I'm here, I'm a participant in this. I am here, and I'm a participant. I'm not the whole universe. Both are true at the same time.
Yeah. As usual, Justin, it's this time, it kind of, I was thinking how this as a practice of speaking this way to one another and feeling kind of undone and noticing, just noticing what it's like to be in relationship to the words that we're having between us and in the conversation, it feels like some sort of meditation. Or, yeah, I don't know that word. I think that word has kind of weirdly been turned into like you have to sit with your eyes closed and your legs crossed or something. But for that kind of meditativeness is to feel like I'm becoming conscious, more and more conscious. And that's what impact this conversation has on me every week, is for there to be parts of consciousness where I could become more conscious revealed to me, that I can then do my best to live into those more deeply, more committedly, more with more awareness of that whatever the dynamic is, or the wondering that we have here. So I'm feeling really grateful for how this meets me in my, I think probably quite straightforward human need to learn and to become more expanded in my understanding of human life and what this life is for all of us. So I'm feeling really grateful for this and to be kind of foraying into places that feel kind of tender and opening and making me wonder even more about life.
What wonderful language. Lizzie, it's a great place for us to end. You and I have never talked about this as being a practice of meditation. And it feels very right to me that this opening to one another and opening to life and opening to Bernardo's words and then having all of this moving in us and between us and then out in who knows what, where this conversation goes in the lives of anyone in whom this lands as well. And it calls us into an engagement with life that's very different from just sort of bumbling through. It's quite the opposite sense. I'm very, very glad to be in this conversation with you. Thank you. Thank you for being one who continues to bring such depth and courage and creativity and openness to this conversation. It's a joy. Who'd have thought? If we added up the number of hours that this conversation is over time, it's a lot. And here it is. It's still unfolding. So it's very thrilling for me. And thank you, all of you who are with us. Any of you who've chosen to listen to this, you are so welcome to share this conversation and these conversations with people who you love. That's how this grows and finds people who to whom it might be of value. And we are going to end here, and all being well, we will be back in a week. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.